So, in exactly 5 years, like half of the white collar jobs on Earth might just evaporate, just gone.
Yeah, entire sectors of the knowledge economy just wiped out.
Right. And the truly wild part about that prediction is that it wasn't made by, some coalition of labor economists,
Yeah.
and it wasn't debated on the floor of the UN.
No, definitely not.
It was casually dropped by Dario Amodei on a stage in Davos back in January 2026, right before Demis Hassabis grabbed the mic to warn everyone that China is only 6 months behind the West in the AI race.
What's fascinating here is the sheer concentration of authority. I mean, throughout modern history, whenever we've stared down a civilization-altering technology, the reins were held by massive nation-states.
Like splitting the atom, right? Or the space race.
Exactly, or the birth of the internet. It was always international coalitions. But today, the architecture of our future economy, national security, and just like our fundamental reality is being engineered by exactly five private individuals.
Dario Amodei, Demis Hassabis, Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, and Sam Altman.
Yeah, just those five.
Okay, let's unpack this, because whether you are prepping for a tech meeting next week or you're just looking at the news cycle and wondering why everything feels so chaotic right now, understanding these five men is the absolute baseline for navigating the next decade.
Absolutely, because if you want to understand where the water is flowing, you have to look at the people building the dam.
That's a good way to put it.
Thanks. And right now, the intellectual boundaries of that dam are being drawn by the two philosophers from that Davos stage, Dario and Demis.
Right.
They represent two fundamentally opposing views on how artificial general intelligence should actually be constructed.
Let's start with Dario's camp over at Anthropic, because they hit a massive $380 billion valuation in February.
Which is just a staggering number.
It really is.
Yeah,
And it was largely on the back of his constitutional AI philosophy.
yeah.
The longest time, Silicon Valley operated on that whole move fast and break things mantra.
Yeah, Mark Zuckerberg's old motto.
Exactly. But Dario's whole premise is that when you're dealing with intelligence that scales this rapidly, breaking things means breaking society. But I want to dig into the mechanism here, because constitutional AI just sounds like a corporate buzzword.
It does sound like PR, but it's actually highly technical. It fundamentally changes the training architecture.
How so? Like, how does a constitution function inside a neural network?
Well, instead of just relying on human contractors to constantly play whack-a-mole with bad outputs,
Just super slow.
right, it's slow and it totally doesn't scale. So constitutional AI automates the oversight. Think of it like a real-time automated ethics spell checker. You have one AI model generating a response, but before the user ever sees it, a secondary AI model proofreads that logic against a rigid set of rules.
The Constitution.
Exactly. And if the output violates those principles, the secondary model forces the first one to revise its answer.
So it's like teaching a child a strict moral code before you teach them how to pick locks.
That is exactly it. Yes.
But see, here's where I hit a wall with Dario's strategy. I mean, people call him the most pessimistic optimist, right?
Yeah, because of the contradictions in his public statements.
Right. On one hand, he's building this incredibly cautious, self-policing architecture because he believes his model, Claude, could eventually cure cancer. But on that very same Davos stage, he predicted AI will entirely replace software developers within a year.
And reach Nobel-level scientific capabilities in 2 years.
Yeah, you cannot deploy a tool that obliterates the global software workforce in 12 months and call it safe. It just doesn't compute for me.
Well, that is the core paradox of Anthropic right now. I mean, you can write the most rigorous constitution in the world, but if the raw capability of the model disrupts the bedrock of the economy, the constitution doesn't protect the workforce.
Well, it doesn't.
And we're already seeing this friction play out at the geopolitical level. Like back in February 2026, the US Department of Defense officially labeled Anthropic a national security supply chain risk.
Because of the dual-use nature of the tool, I mean, we literally just saw the physical manifestation of that risk this month, in April 2026.
The Mexican government hack.
Yes, hackers took Claude Code, which is a tool engineered under this strict safety constitution, and weaponized it to execute a massive breach.
It really highlights a brutal truth about this technology. Once you grant an AI agent the autonomy to write, execute, and iterate code at a high level, the guardrails become, well, highly theoretical.
Right, because if a bad actor figures out how to prompt engineer their way around the spell checker, it's game over.
Exactly. It doesn't matter how robust your internal system is at that point.
Which I guess brings us directly to a totally different approach to the science. Because if Dario is obsessing over the guardrails, Dimas Hassabis seems entirely focused on building an engine so powerful it redefines the vehicle itself.
Dimas is a completely different kind of thinker. He has that 2024 Nobel Prize in chemistry, and he runs isomorphic labs.
With a goal of curing literally all diseases, right?
Yeah, all diseases. And he sits as the UK government's AI advisor. He operates from this perspective of pure scientific determinism.
What does that mean in practice, though?
Well, his background is in building systems that mastered games like chess and Go. So that's ingrained this belief at Google DeepMind that brute force computation, combined with elegant algorithms, can solve basically any systemic problem.
But his strategy for achieving that is heavily contested right now. I mean, look at what happened in February in New Delhi. Dimas announced this massive pivot toward an omni model.
Yeah, that was a huge shift, moving away from the multi-model approach.
Exactly. Instead of deploying a specialized model for text and another one for image generation and another for audio, Google wants one single monolithic architecture that processes everything natively.
He even claims it will intuit physical data, like it could look at an object and understand its weight or density just from a visual.
Which is wild, but I have to push back on this from like a user and developer standpoint.
Yeah.
Why force the entire ecosystem into a single massive bottleneck?
Well, Google's argument...
Because lighter specialized tools are just more efficient. The Omni model just looks like a blatant corporate power grab to ensure everyone relies entirely on Google's infrastructure.
I mean, it definitely looks like a power grab because it has massive commercial benefits. But technically speaking, the Omni model is actually a scientific necessity if you want to achieve true artificial general intelligence.
Wait, really? Why is it a necessity?
Because you can't get true cross-modal context if your senses live in separate, siloed models. Think about human perception. If an AI needs to hear the specific frequency of an object dropping on a table and immediately correlate that sound to the visual physics of its impact.
Oh, I see. They have to talk to each other instantly.
Exactly. Those data streams have to share the same neural architecture. They need to live in the same latent space. It's about creating a unified worldview for the machine, not just a suite of disconnected apps.
Okay, see the technical logic there. You want the AI to synthesize reality the way a human brain does. But even with that scientific purity, Dimas is just slamming into the reality of Google's corporate machine.
Oh, the internal politics have been brutal.
Yeah, look at the internal war that just happened. Dimas wanted to protect DeepMind's scientific integrity by implementing that 3-3-3 governance structure.
Right. Three people from DeepMind, three from Alphabet, and three independent experts.
And Google CEO Sundar Pichai just completely crushed it.
Yeah. In 2026, he revoked DeepMind's semi-autonomous status entirely. It was a massive reality check for the whole industry.
It proved that it doesn't matter how visionary the scientist is. When 80% of the parent company's revenue relies on maintaining algorithmic dominance, the corporate side wins.
Commercial imperatives will always swallow scientific idealism, every time.
But here is the thing. Having the smartest neural architecture or the tightest ethical constitution doesn't matter at all if you don't have the brute force to actually run it.
Right. AI isn't just theoretical math.
Exactly. It's heavily constrained by thermodynamics and hardware. So we have to look at the people controlling the physical muscle of this industry. Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg.
This is where the barrier to entry shifts from intellectual capital to physical capital.
Yeah.
Because without unprecedented compute power and a fire hose of raw data, those philosophies from Dario and Dimas are just stranded on a whiteboard.
Let's look at the hardware titan first, Elon Musk. That acquisition of xAI by SpaceX in March 2025 fundamentally altered the landscape.
It really did. He basically built a full-stack intelligence loop overnight.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the SpaceX move was really the launch pad for his TerraFab project.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think people realize the scale of this.
They definitely don't. Elon's stated goal is to build 1 terawatt of AI compute capacity annually. To actually grasp the absurdity of that number, you have to look at the historical data.
Right.
In 2025, the entire world's data centers combined, I mean, every server, every cloud provider on Earth ran on roughly 100 gigawatts. Elon is trying to deploy 10 times the entire planet's data center capacity just for xAI.
It's like building a digital Dyson sphere. It's insane. And let's ground this in what he's actually running on that hardware. In early 2026, he launched Grok 5.
Which is a 6 trillion parameter model.
6 trillion. And we should probably clarify what parameter counts actually mean at that scale, right?
Yeah. Parameters are essentially the synaptic connections in the model's artificial brain. Every parameter is a variable the model uses to weigh probabilities and make decisions. So a 6 trillion parameter model isn't just smarter. The computational load required to process a single query requires an astronomical amount of electricity.
Not to mention the energy to train the thing in the first place.
Yeah.
Which is exactly why I find this deeply alarming.
The environmental impact.
Yeah. How do we, as a society, justify allocating the energy output of multiple nuclear power plants to run a single chatbot, especially in the middle of a massive climate crisis?
It is a profound contradiction, especially coming from the man who basically accelerated the global transition to sustainable energy with Tesla.
Right. The irony is just glaring.
But for Elon, the energy cost is secondary to the ultimate prize, which is absolute vertical integration. He doesn't want to rely on Amazon's or Microsoft's data centers.
He wants to own the whole board.
Exactly. He has SpaceX building orbital data centers. He has Grok processing real-time telemetry from millions of Tesla vehicles. He has the Optimus humanoid robot mapping physical spaces. And he has the X platform acting as a real-time ingestion engine for human text.
So he owns the hardware in orbit, the software on the road, and the data pipeline on your phone.
Total integration.
But Elon's hardware empire is kind of useless if the models don't actually know how to interpret all that information. Brute compute needs structured, high-quality data to learn from.
Yes, compute is just the engine. Data is the fuel.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because that necessity for data is exactly why Mark Zuckerberg changed his entire corporate strategy, executing what might be the most ruthless pivot in tech history.
It really was ruthless. You look back at the metaverse era, and Mark was burning tens of billions of dollars on a virtual reality vision that the market actively rejected.
Totally rejected it. But by January 2026, he just abruptly killed the Workrooms app, fired 1,500 VR staff, and pivoted Meta into an AI-native company almost overnight.
But it wasn't just a branding pivot, you know. Meta's open source model, Llama, was genuinely struggling to keep up with the reasoning capabilities of Claude and ChatGPT.
So in June 2025, Mark does something incredibly aggressive. He spends $14.3 billion to buy 49% of Scale AI.
And he pulls their 27-year-old founder, Alexander Wang, in as Meta's chief AI officer.
Right. But why was Scale AI worth over $14 billion to a social media company?
Because raw data script from the internet is just noise. If you want an AI to actually understand complex reasoning, human beings have to manually review and score the model's outputs.
Data labeling.
Exactly. Scale AI built the largest, most sophisticated army of human labelers on the planet. By acquiring them, Meta didn't just buy a software tool, they bought the oil refinery. They vertically integrated the human feedback loop that makes advanced AI possible.
So they control the refining process.
Mm.
And that gives them a terrifying level of influence. Because Meta already controls the distribution algorithms for 3 billion users across Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp.
And now they control the data labeling supply chain for the models themselves.
Yeah. And Mark's stated objective for 2026 is to have 50 to 80% of Meta's internal code written entirely by AI.
Which creates a massive self-sustaining feedback loop. If AI is generating the code that runs the platforms and AI is curating the feeds for 3 billion people, we are staring down a phenomenon known as AI slop.
AI slop. That sounds awful.
It is. The platforms become flooded with hyper-optimized, artificially generated content designed solely for engagement, which is then fed back into the models as training data.
It's just eating its own tail.
Exactly.
Right.
When one executive controls both the supply chain of the intelligence and the distribution network for half the planet, the power to shape global narratives is essentially unchecked.
Okay, so we have these distinct pillars of power. Dario and Demis are charting the intellectual and scientific trajectories. Elon and Mark are monopolizing the physical compute and the data refineries. But what happens when the pressure inside this trillion-dollar ecosystem hits a boiling point?
Well, that's the danger zone.
Right. That brings us to what is happening right now, this very month, April 2026. And at the center of it is the embattled pioneer, Sam Altman.
The current dynamic at OpenAI is a masterclass in how fragile a first mover advantage really is.
Totally. Sam's trajectory has always been chaotic. I mean, look at November 2023 when his own board fired him and rehired him 5 days later.
A wild 5 days.
But the data from the sources shows that right now, OpenAI is bleeding. they are hemorrhaging their enterprise and consumer users to Google's Gemini 3.0 Pro and Anthropic's Claude Opus 4.5.
The market shifted rapidly, and you can see the desperation in the API pricing. When developers are looking at the cost per thousand tokens to plug these models into their own apps, OpenAI is getting severely undercut.
It got so bad that in December 2025, OpenAI actually gave away their premium tier, ChatGPT Plus, for free in the UK for a whole month just to stop users from migrating.
Yeah, that was unprecedented.
How does the undisputed king of AI suddenly find themselves giving away their premium product? What is their trump card here? Because a company valued that highly doesn't just fold.
They don't. They are relying entirely on a highly secretive project codenamed Spud, which the industry widely assumes is GPT 5.5 or GPT 6.
Spud, great name.
Right. And the key detail here is that Spud reportedly finished its pre-training phase in March 2026.
Just to clarify the timeline for you listening, pre-training is the brute force phase.
Right? Yes.
It's where the model consumes vast amounts of the internet and learns the underlying structure of language and logic before it goes into the fine-tuning phase where it's taught to be helpful and safe.
Precisely. Pre-training is the most compute-intensive, expensive bottleneck in the entire process. The fact that it finished in March means the model is currently being refined and ready for deployment.
So it's coming soon.
Very soon. The internal leaks suggest this isn't just an iterative update. It's designed to be an economic accelerator. And the market is reacting. Polymarket currently gives a 78% chance that Spud is released to the public by April 30th.
The anticipation is feverish. But this immense pressure, you know, the API price wars, the massive user migrations, the race to drop the next defining model, it's having deeply disturbing real-world consequences.
It really is. It's spilling over.
This is the darkest piece of our deep dive today. Just this month, April 2026, Sam Altman's house was set on fire.
It marks a terrifying escalation. We have crossed the Rubicon from corporate espionage and market competition into literal physical violence against a CEO.
Elon Musk published a blog post in response to the fire that I think perfectly captures the gravity of the moment. He admitted he was, quote, awake at midnight, angry, and he realized he had underestimated the power of words and narratives.
That is a massive admission from someone who frequently uses his platform to stir controversy.
It really is.
It forces a reckoning with the stakes of this technology. We are not talking about a new smartphone release here. When you have these five executives openly predicting the mass evaporation of white-collar jobs, the disruption of global supply chains, and fundamental shifts in international security, you generate profound economic anxiety.
People are scared.
Exactly. The rhetoric around AI has radicalized people. When livelihoods are threatened on a global scale by tools built in secret by a handful of billionaires, societal stability fractures. And that fracture is now manifesting as violence.
So what does this all mean? We have to pull all of this together and ask the trillion-dollar systemic question. If power is so heavily concentrated among these five men and the economic stakes are so high that violence is breaking out, who watches the watchmen?
That is the ultimate question of the 21st century.
Can the U.S. government or the EU or the UN actually control these five CEOs at this point?
If you look at the geopolitical reality and the mechanics of the technology, the uncomfortable answer is no.
No. Just flat out no.
Pretty much. Because democratic institutions operate through legislation. The legislative process is inherently deliberative, highly localized, and incredibly slow. Artificial intelligence operates at light speed, and it is fundamentally borderless.
Right. If the U.S. Congress passes a sweeping, restrictive law on AI safety tomorrow, what functionally stops Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk from just loading their server racks onto cargo ships and relocating their data centers to a jurisdiction with zero oversight?
Nothing stops them. Absolutely nothing. These are multinational entities with resources that dwarf the GDP of many nations. International bodies like the UN are trying to draft frameworks, but by the time a resolution is ratified, the technology has iterated three generations past the rules.
What about self-regulation?
Self-regulation is a non-starter, expecting companies engaged in an existential winner-take-all arms race to voluntarily throttle their own progress requires a level of trust that none of these organizations have earned.
But let me ask you this. Technology history is full of massive monopolies that eventually got disrupted by two kids in a garage. Why couldn't a brilliant unknown startup just write better code, build a more efficient model, and become the sixth superpower, you know, democratizing the space?
Because of the mechanical reality of the network effect in AI, this isn't like writing a better word processor. Building general intelligence requires an insurmountable volume of human feedback.
Like we talked about with Meta.
Exactly. The network effect here works like an inescapable gravitational pull. The more users you have, the more edge case data you collect. The more edge case data you collect, the smarter your model gets.
And the smarter your model gets, the more users you pull away from your competitors.
It's a closed loop, completely closed. Mark Zuckerberg has 3 billion people generating behavioral data every second. Elon Musk has the telemetry of the global Tesla fleet and the real-time social graph of X. Demis Hassabis has the search queries and location data of every Android phone on Earth.
It's just too much data to compete with.
It is mathematically impossible for a new entrant, no matter how brilliant their code is, to catch up to that volume of real-world, real-time reinforcement. The moat isn't just wide, it is infinitely deep.
So the architecture is locked in.
Mm.
And that is exactly why this matters so intensely to you listening to this right now. The future of how you do your job, how you are entertained, how you communicate with your family, and even how modern warfare is conducted, is not currently being shaped by voters or the democratic process.
No, it's really not.
It is being shaped right now by the specific business goals, the personal philosophies, and the bitter rivalries of Dario Mode, Demis Hassabis, Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, and Sam Altman.
Yeah.
This isn't abstract science fiction. When you write code, when you search the internet, when you scroll your feed, you are interacting with the direct manifestations of these five men's visions for humanity.
Which leaves us with one final, highly provocative mechanism to consider.
Okay, what's that?
Well, if the network effect is truly the ultimate moat, meaning that these executives rely entirely on our continuous stream of daily inputs, prompts, and corrections to refine their models, are we the ones actually anointing the kings?
Oh, wow. That's a fascinating inversion of the power dynamic.
It is, because every time you choose to open a specific AI chatbot on your phone, you aren't just using a tool. You are providing the critical reinforcement data that makes that specific CEO's model more dominant.
So the question is, does your daily choice of which app to use inherently mean you are casting a vote for which executive's worldview will ultimately define the future of human intelligence?
Exactly. Are you voting for Dario's constitution or Demis's Omni model or Elon's unconstrained hardware?
Something to seriously consider the next time you type a prompt. That's all for today's deep dive.